I'm the guy building Porsches with twin turbo shooting flames. And when I say reluctantly and begrudgingly, I built this car. Like, I hated every, I'm like, why is there so much wiring? This is stupid.
Yeah.
And I got it running. The first time ever, I just drove it like a regular petrol car, like half throttle, and I almost urinated on myself.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the most amazing, the torque, the lack of lag, the speed. And then it had a weird sound, like a supercharger style whine.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
It wasn't quiet like everyone was saying. This thing has more soul than James Brown.
It's like, so your background's looking pretty nice back there. Yeah,
you're too kind.
What you got going on there?
Featured vehicles a lot, quite a bit. I have my Cayman that's gonna go EV soon. I have my center seat Porsche. We have EV conversion as well. We have a 65 bus that we converted as well.
Oh wow!
My drag car is going EV. In the very back, I have a Rolls Royce that we're gonna be launching in May.
Oh no way!
EV as well. We have a lot going on here.
Yes,
that's amazing. My name is Elvis, or the easiest part of my name is Elvis. I'm Ufoma. I'm Nigerian. So.
Oh nice.
So we'll talk about that later. But
and Tim.
Okay.
Tim. And I'm Rob.
Whenever I saw your name initially, I was like, wait a second, this guy is totally Nigerian.
And you're correct. I am. I'm Igbo. Most people hear the name BC, they think it's Yoruba.
That's exactly what I thought. Thinking it was like Ade BC, but it's
Ade BC, but it's Ndi BC.
Yeah. So my parents are Igbo as well. So
very nice.
Yeah. So do you still speak Igbo or no?
I'm not Igbo, Fuma.
Amazing. Okay, so Akeke me.
Odinama.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh man,
that's amazing. Wow, so like my mom is from Enugu, so
I went to school in Enugu.
Oh no way. Okay, what school?
Yeah, but then it was an Anambra State University of Technology.
Oh,
I did one year of petrochemical engineering there.
I think that was the same school my mom went to, actually.
No way. Yeah, we call it Aztec for sure.
That's crazy. That's okay.
Yeah. I was kind of crazy because I got entrance when I was 15.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
I took the exam to enter just to get it's very difficult back home to get into a good curriculum. Mm-hmm. So if you fail JAMB or WAEC, you have to wait a year to be able to get in. So what I did, seeing my aunties and uncles trying to become doctors, engineers, or lawyers, and having a hard time getting in, and you have to wait a year to reapply.
Yeah.
At the age of 14, I took it just to see how it is. So when I'm 17, I could be ready and comfortable with it. And then I passed. My dad's like, what do you want to do? I'm like, I want to go. So at 15, I went to Aztec studying engineering. It was terrifying, but exciting
at
the same time. Easy. And that kind of, I don't want to take away from our story because that led me to coming here. So we can probably get into that a little bit more. But that's where I went to school, was in Enugu.
That's amazing. Okay, if you guys do not know Bisimoto, he builds some amazing cars, and we're going to get into that later. But ever since I saw, I think, when did I even hear about you? I think it was like from your minivan or something.
Minivan, oh my goodness. Yeah. No matter what I build, it doesn't matter what I build.
Yeah.
Minivan seems to be the be-all, end-all. It's the car that most popular about people. I could drive the most amazing exotic to an event and I'll get a slew of people. Where's the van?
Yeah.
And for those who don't know it, this is a van that we built in 2013 for American Honda. Part of our business model for many years has been to build cars for the OEMs for major auto shows, like the LA Auto Show, Detroit, Chicago, SEMA, events like that, where we take a vehicle that's in factory format and make it exciting for the masses, put a little nice performance, twist to it, and just create marketing appeal. And in 2013, American Honda didn't have anything that was in the performance realm. The year before was the Civic Si that came out. Prior to that was a CRZ. They're planning the year after that to come out with a new Accord. But that year of 2013, there was nothing exciting, but they had the new Odyssey. And I started a family at that time, very young family. I didn't want to give up my Need for Speed. So I came up with a concept and pitched it. Why don't I build a performance family hauler? And the higher ups at Honda were like, that is the most stupid thing you've ever heard. Who cares about a performance minivan? If it's a Civic, we get it. If it's an Acura Integra, we get it. Anything but that doesn't make sense. And believe it or not, Chris Martin was the Western Region PR manager at the time. And against his boss's wishes, he approved it because he saw something. He believed in our concept.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know that when we're done building that 1,000-horsepower minivan in 7 weeks, by the way, when we're done building that, it became not only one of our most popular vehicles, but one of the most popular cars at SEMA that year. And the Odyssey sales for Honda went off the charts.
Really?
So, yeah, it went off the charts. And then from then on, I remember Rutledge Wood saw it, and he was part of Top Gear US at the time. And then he had to drive it, so we got it on Top Gear, and it got on Car Matchmaker with Spike Ferenson from Seinfeld. And then it got on Drive TV with Matt Farah. It just started going everywhere. And got Netflix shows, and it just became this icon.
Icon, yeah.
And it was an ugly burgundy minivan, and we turned into this amazing vehicle that I still have till today. Still take the kids to school in that van as we speak. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's interesting how that plays out like that, isn't it? You're like, what? This thing?
Never knew. Yeah. Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Yeah. We're getting a little taste of that right now in our shop because we're building something silly too. And like at it and like, this is ridiculous. We don't take it seriously at all.
What is it? Tell me what it is.
It's a Lamborghini Urus body swapped onto a 2005 Chevy Tahoe chassis.
What the heck?
So, I mean, and all the stars kind of just aligned, and it's like, you know what? We got this crash damaged body that is irreparable. Right. Let's do something stupid. Let's put it on this because it comes with an LS. We had a twin turbo set up for it, and we had these 40-inch tall, dirt tires, and let's just do something silly. So we did that, not thinking much about it, mostly just for like our shop to sort of like, build sort of team fun and just a thing.
Right.
Shop parts, just toss it on. And it just actually exploded online.
I am not surprised.
And now we get show promoters like, hey, can you bring that thing to the show? I don't care about any of the other things that you guys are doing that we like legit take seriously. All they want is that.
That is awesome.
We can totally relate.
Tim said he saw your car, or I think 2019.
My car was across from your EV slant. Mine was the twin turbo Mercedes.
Were you in Toyo's booth?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you have out there? What
car was it? The Mercedes 190E.
That was you?
That's mine, yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty clean. That thing was clean.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That thing was beautiful. So you still have it?
Yes, of course. That one will probably never leave. Nice. I'll have that one till the end.
It's so funny, the story around that particular slant nose that I fondly call the K3V. I was driving around this. Actually, I'm wearing this. It's not here in the office. I drove it all this weekend, so it's at home because I have another few events I'm attending with it this week. But that car was a car that I actually hated building. We talked about your Urus with the underpinnings of the GM attributes. And then I talked about my minivan, how exciting that was, but 7 weeks and it was a lot of work and blood, sweat, and tears and kind of tons of sleepless nights. I hated building this car. I absolutely hated it.
Really?
And there was a reason for my hatred for it. But it also was a blessing in disguise. And I'll be more than happy to get into it.
Yes.
But that was a fun one. And even at SEMA that we both attended, Tim, no one even knew it was electric. I wasn't known for that at all.
Yeah, it wasn't obvious. So
people walk around like, oh, okay, BC has another cool Porsche.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it had some electric underpinnings. Well, I don't know how much I'm at liberty to share within this podcast.
However much you feel
comfortable. I may have to protect the innocent here.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I have to be careful because I'll probably give it away how this story came to be.
Okay.
There is a manufacturer that I've built cars for many years.
Mm-hmm.
There's even a car behind me somewhere here that was built.
But okay.
Leave it like that. And the following year, after having an exciting SEMA build for them, we came up with a concept of building a K3 or Kremer-inspired Porsche. I was able to find original Kremer body molds from curators from Monterey. So they had these Monterey, California historic events and Rennsport reunion with Porsches where some of these people of great means are able to drive, race, crash, Group 5 vehicles. Mm-hmm. So you have these old school crammers, Coca-Cola and Jägermeister, and when they crash them, they want to have it repaired with original body molds. They don't want fake stuff or patching up. They want to replace it with original molds. So because of that, Southern California or California does have access to the original Kramer molds for Group 5 racing from the 80s and 70s.
Wow.
So I was able to, with some networking, secure the full kit, original Kramer kit, and I grafted it onto a white Porsche I had here that I didn't really care about because I kind of built it. One headlight was kind of off. I'm sharing more than I've ever shared before. One headlight was kind of just slightly crooked, and it just annoyed me, and I just parked it, nose in, never wanted to. So I grafted that Kramer body to it. So back to my sponsor, where I build cars for. We want to build a Porsche. I had this whole concept on paper, twin turbo, four digits Porsche, water-cooled engine, sequential gearbox, just amazing, Porsche taking to the next level.
Yeah.
And keep it as true to its Group 5 heritage with some slight updates. So instead of a carbon fiber, instead of a fiberglass splitter or fiberglass wing, I'll infuse carbon fiber, but same dimensions, same shape. Mm-hmm. I had this whole thing going on. So you guys have built SEMA cars. You know how it is. Mm-hmm. You know, the SEMA crunch. We try to avoid that as much as we can.
Of course. Seems unavoidable.
We try though. To. Yeah, we can't even successfully do that, but we try. So knowing that is difficult, I wanted to start this project way ahead of time. So we had a handshake at the SEMA that was successful, shooting for the next year's SEMA with a BC Motor twin turbo Porsche in their booth, and I began the process. So I bought the body, got the chassis, took my paint shop, grafted everything on. I'm already in this project maybe 70K, and the gentleman who signed off on this project ended up getting fired from the company for embezzlement of funds.
Oh, shit.
And so from what I gather, and I hope this is in here, this probably, what I gather is that he was a marketing individual, but would farm out projects through his wife's firm and kind of pad things, and then he'll pocket the money. It was kind of some embezzlement going on. Mm-hmm. So all his projects, including ours, was put on ice. So wow. Here I am, 70K in. No budget, nothing. I'm looking at this car and like, what am I gonna do with it? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm gonna take a step back to a couple years earlier. I built a car for Harman Kardon. You guys may know them, JBL, all that good stuff. So Harman Kardon is one of our accounts. We built this crazy Hyundai, because them and Hyundai have this relationship. We built a Hyundai Tucson, 700 horsepower, normal BC fashion, turbo sticking out the hood, all chromed out, on bags, just BC Motor blue, beautiful, white wheels, just really cool.
Yeah.
And then we are building it for CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas. Mm-hmm. So 2 years prior to me having this problem with this Porsche, I go there, they give me access to CES, and I walk around with my team, and I'm flabbergasted. You guys have all been to SEMA. Mm-hmm. You've seen Ford, you see Honda, you see Toyota. These are all partners I've worked with in the past. They are all at CES. With booths bigger than SEMA booths.
Wow.
With cars that look like the budgets are out of control. You guys know how expensive it is to build a car. Mm. And our budgets each year keeps getting tighter and tighter. I go to CES and the Honda's booth is like multi-story level. Oh, wow. Vehicles. I'm like, what is going on here?
What?
And guess what? All the cars in there were EV.
Wow.
I'm like, oh, shoot. If I want to stay relevant, if I still want to work for these people, as much as I hate this technology, I need to embrace it. And when I say hate, guys, you know, we're talking here in this forum. It's a pleasure interacting with all of you. If we had this forum 2018, 2017, even 2019, I'd be the first talking crap about
it. Wow, not even that far back.
Yeah. I would say they're rubbish. They are for tree huggers. EVs are for people who wore hemp sandals. These are for people who don't care about performance. The cars have no soul. Mm-hmm. Not that I ever drove one. I was just regurgitating what I read and what I heard. Uh-huh. What some of my customers would tell me. I remember my bank manager locally here came by David, and he had a Model S Performance. I wouldn't even sit in it. He's a beast. I'm not.
You were not interested.
Yeah, I was really, and every format I had, every platform, I spoke ill.
Wow.
Like, they were rubbish. Okay? So now, back to CES. I'm like, what is going on? All my partners are, Porsche was even there. Porsche doesn't go to SEMA. Mitsubishi was there. Mitsubishi doesn't go to SEMA. They all had EVs. I'm like, what is going on? So I reluctantly started putting a pen to paper and like, hey, one day maybe need to figure this out. Fast forward to that 2018, 2019 timeframe. Mm-hmm. My guy is out. I have this car that's at a paint shop. I'm in the hole. And I said, you know what? Let me try and build this. Let me just try. I don't know anything about it. I have a lot of OEM contacts. I just developed a relationship with Karma. Let me talk to the engineers there. I saw a gentleman by the name of Michael Bream from EV West at Hoonigan. He was doing a burnout at Hoonigan. I saw this smoke and the car is quiet. I'm like, what is, so I interacted with him. So I started talking to people and learning as much as I can. And when I say reluctantly and begrudgingly, I built this car. Like, I hated every, I'm like, why is there so much wiring? This is stupid.
Yeah.
And guess what? After 11 months and even taking a loan to build it, because it was just became more and more expensive, I made so many mistakes. It cost me over $200,000 to build this car because I just was making so many mistakes.
Yeah, it's your first time.
And learning, and I was getting so much conflicting information. I ended up going to my OEM partners to really help me do this properly. And a very good friend of mine who also used to work at Karma and opened up a small facility in I guess the Long Beach, Orange County area. And, you know, Rasant was his company, and he was a fellow engineer, and we were kind of bouncing things off each other. And Andrew helped me quite a bit, figure things out. And I got it running with half the battery pack for that SEMA event you saw.
Wow.
And then a funny thing is that the first time, right in the back of my facility, the first time ever, I just drove it like a regular petrol car, like half throttle. Mm-hmm. And I almost urinated on myself.
Yeah, yeah.
It was the most amazing, the torque, the lack of lag, the speed. And then it had a weird sound, like a supercharger style whine.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
It wasn't quiet like everyone was saying. And I'm like, this thing is cool. And then I took it around the block. I'm like, wait a minute. I had more feedback to the road. I could hear the pebbles hitting the bodywork. Mm-hmm. My brake feel was amplified. My steering. It's like, you sit in the car, it smells like an old Porsche, feels like an old Porsche, but doesn't leak. Charges fine. Yeah. And accelerates like there's no tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the heck? And I was just over, like, that split second, I became an advocate.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm like, this thing is awesome. This soul thing, this thing has more soul than James Brown. It's like, I everything, it's almost like my petrol engine always, because I'm the guy building Porsches with twin turbos, shooting flames.
Yeah.
That sound almost, how should I say, dampened the road feedback. It dampened the tire feedback. It dampened the brake feel. It's just things I took for that normally, all that was amplified with just this supercharger whine. Mm-hmm. And you look down, you're doing 100, like, oh my God. And then being in California, it's kind of difficult with emissions.
Yeah,
it's now zero emissions, so I'm able to pass, have no emission testing, and have no problems with the EPA. This was like a, and then I just became an advocate. And I remember my first photo shoot was with Speed Hunters, and then Mike from Speed Hunters came by with his team, and they're like, "Ugh, we were sent here to film this thing. Whatever, EVs are garbage." I'm like, "Guys, I hear you. I was like this a few weeks ago. Drive this. Just drive." Like, no, I'm like, "Mike, drive it." And I'll probably try and send you guys a video so you can see his reaction. You can probably impregnate that in what you're doing here.
Yeah, like that.
He drove. He's like, "What the?" He's like, "What? Like, this is crazy. It's not a Leaf. It's not a Model 3. It's not even a Model S. It's just, how dare I say, it's almost like I stumbled onto the perfect symbiosis between analog and digital.
Yeah.
Because it celebrates the heritage of Porsche. It celebrates being an old kind of G-body inside. Everything looks just, you know, I don't put screens. I try and make it as, I have a shifter to initiate gear. I have a sequential shifter because I love sequential. Remember, that car was going to be a sequential. I left a shifter in there to initiate gears. And it's just, it feels great. This weekend, I was just smiling the whole time. I drove all over the county. I went to, you know, Porsche Ontario event. I went to, I just parked right in front of the dealership
at,
Aston Martin. They had a new launch of a new vehicle that they had out there, a new Vantage. And I just parked right front and center there.
Nice. People
just driving around it. It's an amazing vehicle.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic. And it's totally changed my life. And Tim, after going to SEMA with you and launching it, we start getting calls. People are like, "Hey, I want something similar to what you have here. And my base, I guess my baseline or my go-to, my guide for building this car was my fifth gen Viper. Okay. So I had a 2014 Viper GTS, made 630 horsepower, full tank, I get 120 miles of gas, you know, of range or full tank of gas. So I kind of build my performance EVs around that. And this was no exception. It gets, if I drive normal, I can get 150 miles. I did like 120 yesterday or this past weekend because I was really misbehaving. And I was able to do that and it was a lot of fun. But the power on this is 636. So it's right there with the Viper, lighter, much faster. Instead of 3.1060, this is 206, 060.
Wow.
I have to run slicks to even keep this thing planted. Forgive me, I get really excited. I'm sorry about being so verbose, but it's really exciting stuff. And that's my, that was my journey from a diehard petrol head to someone who now appreciates electric motors. Don't get me wrong, I still have petrol cars around here. There's a petrol car here. There's a petrol for now, but I appreciate both.
Yeah.
Where I can appreciate and enjoy both. And it, they all are different, but not bad.
Yeah.
But it feels good being able to pull up to people and you see them on freeway, like looking and sticking their head out, like they don't hear anything. They don't hear anything loud, but the thing looks, and I just take off, like, oh my God. You know, yeah. So it's, it's really great. It's
yeah,
great.
It really is.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I like it. It's so cool to hear you talk about it. And it's still, the excitement is there. It's so interesting. the excitement is making me excited. I'm like, oh my God, I can't wait to, I haven't gotten the chance to see it. I think that year I wasn't at SEMA with them, but I haven't like seen it in person, but I'm like, oh, I cannot wait to hopefully check it out someday. But what is
if your, you also, ever come to LA, I would encourage you.
Yeah.
I'm not joking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Drive it.
Oh, bro. Like,
what the heck? It's really a bad influence. It's like everyone, all my customers here have driven, except for one guy.
Okay.
Just trusted it. He just loved what I did. But all the other clients here have driven it and they're like, shut up and take my money.
Yeah, please.
That is amazing.
It's amazing. Die hard Porsche file.
But yeah.
See, even from a cost perspective, if I had to build for a client a 600 horsepower, 3.6 liter, even, why even, yeah, 3.6 liter Metzger engine, it will cost more than a conversion.
Oh yeah.
And then it won't be emissions friendly. It won't be, it won't pass the mark anywhere. You have to put Montana plates or do figure something. I don't know what people
do. Unless it was an early car or something.
Yeah. Unless it's an early car. So unless it's 75 and early in California, then you're fine to some extent. But it's more cost effective. It's faster. I mean, when I say faster, much quicker.
Mm-hmm.
I have we have a vehicle that I just traveled back east this morning. It's a M16 Tribute, also a 935, a blue one that you may have seen, twin turbo. That thing makes 920 horsepower.
Yeah.
Can you believe that this car was smoking? In top speed, maybe not, but in acceleration, even up to close to half the mile, this thing would kill it. And
that's
then at 167, this will probably peter out.
Mm-hmm.
And then that will keep going. It'll probably pass it and get to 200, no problem. Mm-hmm. But in terms of what you and I enjoy, what we love to like have fun, you can't shake a stick at this thing. It's just absolutely amazing.
That's so cool. We haven't built any like performance EVs, but we did... For SEMA last year, we built a car.
Yeah, we built a G-Wagon.
Yeah.
A two-door G-Wagon.
And it was EV.
That one was also in Toyo?
Yeah.
I saw that thing was, I was like, how did you guys find that body? That is so rare.
Very rare.
How did you find that?
We have a really good customer he goes by the Mercedes G-Wagon Collector. So originally we were supposed to swap a normal Cabriolet and then he had opportunity to purchase that. And he's like, should we swap this? I was like, sounds crazy, but let's do it. Yeah. So
it was that thing. I was so excited. I took so many pictures and videos of that thing. I posted it too.
Nice. That's
so
amazing. Cool. Okay,
I didn't know with you guys. That was so nice.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So it's been the same for us after finishing that one. It's just like one EV vehicle because we're horsepower guys and we built crazy cars. Right. Traditionally, we did a lot of resto mods. So then transitioning into exotics and then doing stuff like that. And then now the EV stuff is like the perception of it is that it's easy. It's like, oh, just another EV conversion.
Oh, no.
Like you just, it's way more complicated. It's the packaging is insane. And then now having finished that one, it's the same thing. Everybody wants EV conversions. So we have a couple more of them on the go and it's been a learning curve, but it's not like how quickly it's dismissed just makes me crazy. Cause it is so complicated.
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah.
That is to be expected. I mean, as humans, we are slow to change. I'm sure back in the day when everyone was a horse and buggy and automobile came out, people probably complained about it too.
Yeah.
And we're very slow to change to that. And, you know, when we do all the horses and what about the manure? It's so good for us. You know, who knows, you know?
Yeah.
But it's going to happen no matter what. I mean, technology will continue to advance no matter what we think, no matter what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for one, I'm a true testament to someone who was extremely stubborn, who had a platform, abused it by speaking ill of it, and now I've turned a new leaf. So
yeah.
when people give me a hard time, and I do get that, I'm sure you guys get some hard times too from certain enthusiasts, you know, I understand where they're coming from because I was there. I was even worse, you know, but just having an open mind and exploring it,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing. It's just, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah, it truly is.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's an undeniable technology.
Yeah.
And the performance and everything that it represents is undeniably amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And like, yeah, you do have to be pretty open-minded to accept it.
I think you have to experience it before you should be able to comment.
100%.
Yeah. Agreed.
Because like even the G-Wagon not being a performance-based vehicle, you get in it and it's the acceleration and the sound of it is so wild. Like it's undeniable. Like you have to experience it. So like 90% of, I think, of these people that are like, oh, you wrecked this. This is gross. This is blah, blah, blah. I don't know if they've ever actually experienced it because I don't think you can have that opinion without having experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. So.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And so like you, because I know before EV stuff came along, like you were big in, what's it called? Horsepower. And you were drag racing, all of that. So
of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, how did that even start? Like, how did you get into?
Oh boy.
Yeah. How did that begin?
A lot of naughty stuff. Unfortunately, this past Friday, I went to a funeral and it was, my uncle, not by blood, but the American family that took me in when I came here to Nigeria. The first son of the family, Uncle Ronnie, passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And
sorry
one thing,
that.
I told the same story, and you know, it was kind of a celebration of life. Thank you for, I appreciate that. And in such a celebration of life, I got up and I spoke and told them how this gentleman has actually helped me change my first spark plugs and my first cap and rotor in my CRX.
Wow.
So how did that come to be? Growing up back home, as you can attest to,
yep.
Motorsports is not very strong. I mean, it wasn't then. Now people are doing a little bit of drifting, a little bit of rallying.
Oh, and so they do that in Nigeria now?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
That's
so
amazing.
You go to Abuja, there's full-blown drift competitions.
Oh,
I get invited all the time.
Shoot,
you know, I'll probably
sick.
Go later on this year, worst case next year. But yeah, so it's starting to pick up now. But back when I was in school, when I was a teenager, no such thing. But I always loved cars. I just had this affinity for vehicles. My parents tell me, I don't remember this, that my first word as a child was car. And then my second word was light, which is ironic, right?
Oh, okay.
A car light. I kept saying, so my dad would say when at night when they're driving, I was like, car light, car light. You know, so like that was my thing.
Yeah.
And then so that was my first word. So I've always had affinity for cars, but I come to the United States to study engineering. So I went to where your mom's from, Enugu, Anambra State University. Mm-hmm. Went there for a year, didn't learn anything. Our books were just very... very old, from the 60s.
Yep. Yeah.
I guess if you want to get an A, you bribe the instructor,
yeah.
Whatever.
Oh,
you
know, bro. Oh. You know, I have stories, you know, about that, but.
Yeah, I'm telling you. You sleep with the instructor if you're a girl, you bribe it if you're a guy, whatever, yep. And then you get an A. So I told my parents, hey, I'm not learning anything here. Both my parents went to school here in the US. I come from a very scientific background. My mom is a brilliant biochemist. They're visiting this week, by the way.
Oh,
my father's a geologist and has a doctorate as well.
Wow.
And they both went to school here in the U.S. And I told my parents that I want to follow in their footsteps and also go to U.S. and take advantage of technology and learning there. So I'll give you kind of condensed version because this can go on forever.
Yeah.
But my father had to travel to Europe. My mom had to take care of the factory. They have a cosmetics factory back in Nigeria. And I came by myself. My mom escorted me to Lagos. And from my international flight from BA, from Lagos to Heathrow to LAX, I flew by myself, first time as a 16-year-old at this time. Then there was a family at LAX waiting for me with a sign that said BC. And there was a family that my parents knew, my dad knew from his geology days, that owned an oil company.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved in with them in Whittier, a city called Whittier in Southern California, and went to school from there. They started having some financial problems. So I had to sell that house and move out of state. And I was still in LA in school. My dad told me, son, don't worry. I have another family that you can go to.
Wow.
They're in a very beautiful Jewish community. I remember them when I was in school. By the way, my dad went to school in the 60s, right? Mm. I remember this place. The city is amazing. Beautiful family. Stay with them. Yes, father. The city? Compton. What? Oh. Compton was predominantly white and Jewish in the 60s, but not in the 80s.
No.
Late 80s, early 90s was not the place to be.
No, my and, gosh.
The family, the Jones family, they picked me up, and you know, when Lancasters move out, they moved to Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
They picked me up. We went to Compton. I'm like, okay, this doesn't look very Jewish, but that place did mold me significantly.
Wow.
Yes, people made fun of me because I was Nigerian. Everyone knew my name was BC. Well, first, I told people my name is Ndubuisi.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't pronounce Ndubuisi. They called me Ndubuisi, Mitsubishi, everything but my name.
Oh,
I'm like,
wow.
Okay, I'm cutting half, BC. Mm-hmm. Okay, they can do B. But then some people still refuse to call me BC, you know, because I'm in the hood. They're like, you're from Africa?
The home, right, the
Kunta.
Motherland.
So my name is Kunta. My name is Kunta.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Kunta. All right, fine. But that area kind of got me into what was an amazing environment, which was sport compact drag racing. There was a lot of street racing in Compton.
Mm.
And I got hooked. I bought a CRX just as a commuter car as a student. I worked at a Circuit City part-time while I was in school. And even the guys at Circuit City were modifying their cars. The gentleman who I went through training with, James Johnson, who's a very close friend of mine, had a clean RX-7 with a 13B. He never had a purple. He had a street port on it with a Holley carburetor. And it was just awesome. And he's like, yeah, we need. And so I'm like, oh, I should put carburetors on mine too. I started reading books. I met this gentleman by the name of John Concialdi, who was a founder of AEM. He had a small shop in Compton as well. Then he moved to Gardena. He taught me about putting side draft McCoonies on my car.
Wow.
And that kind of just started my love. And because of my experience there and finding out that my money at Circuit City wasn't enough to get me through school, but street racing can be quite lucrative, that's when I started doing that because of my influence living in Compton.
Wow. And
that's how I started drag racing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I was doing that. I would test that. There was a racetrack in Long Beach known as Terminal Island. And I would race there with my friends. We'll always figure things out. And when I say figure things out, guys, there was no trick factory back then where you can just go in and drop off your car and build stuff. It didn't happen. There was no BC Moto, there was no eBay, there was no Amazon. There was everything you had to do, you had to figure out yourself.
That's crazy.
Everything. Mm-hmm. You couldn't buy valve springs for a Honda. Like, there was nothing available there. I remember going to like Iskandarian Cams, who does a lot of stuff with domestics, and buying inner springs for a Chevy as my valve spring.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then I'll read books from like How to Build Horsepower, Volume 1 and 2 by David Vizard, who's a domestic guy. And I'll take that technology and then transfer to mine. I'll talk to Nick Arias, who's also in Gardena next to Compton, and he'll tell me, oh, let's try this on your car. It works very well with Chevys, or it works very well with Hemis. And he'll make my first set of pistons. And then I found a guy, Javier, from JG Engine Dynamics. So we're all like finding, experimenting, blowing things. I had a 30% success rate.
Oh, wow.
70% of my experiments would end up in a catastrophe. I'm dropping valves, blowing motors, throwing rods. But unlike a lot of people who'd give up, I was excited as an engineering student. Like, why did this happen? Let me find ways of improving it. And before you knew it, that flipped. My success was now 70%.
Wow.
My fail was 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And each time I went to the racetrack to test, because all I'm doing is testing at the racetrack to street race.
Mm-hmm.
So I see my times improving. I'm tuning the car, I'm tuning my carbs. I'm going from McCoonies to Webers to get more flow. I'm trying different exhaust systems. I'm trying different head porting techniques. I'm trying different camshafts. I'm doing all the faster I got, people come to me like, dude, what did you do? How'd you gain 2/10? How'd you go from, which was fast then, how'd you go from 14.1 to 13.9? What'd you do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tried this camshaft. Oh, could you make one for me? I tried this exhaust manifold. I modify my DC header modify mine. And then at the street races, I kept becoming this very reliable winner of races.
Mm-hmm.
And like, wow, BC and his motors, BC Moto, his motors are good, BC's motors, BC Moto. And then the nickname just stuck, BC Moto. Yeah, some people don't see me, like, is this some old Japanese guy? I'm like, okay, I get the Japanese, but why old? Oh, because he's been racing for so long.
Yeah.
I'm like, I was a teenager when I started, you know? So it's like, it was really exciting stuff. And I kept street racing for many years until one day in Ontario, I went street racing because there's supposed to be big money in Ontario and Sylmar, and I saw someone pass from crashing.
Oh no.
And then I quit cold turkey and I said, okay, it's only track for me. So I started racing at the tracks. Terminal Island closed down. They opened up Fontana. I raced in Fontana. I raced in Pomona. And then I got approached by an agent from American Honda, known as John Yoshinaga. Mm-hmm. They had a Honda Factory Performance at the time, which was like a little banner, the performance division of American Honda. And they asked me, hey, would you like to race for us? We've been watching you from the side. Because I'm always, my thing is I always race, always do what I can to win.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, you know, I haven't shared this with anyone, but I really didn't care about racing. I didn't.
Wow.
I loved technology. I loved figuring things out. Mm-hmm. That was my passion. How could I go faster? How could I go better? I didn't like, oh, I want to be a driver. I could care less. Driving was the best way for me to experience my technology, for me to experience my improvement. So I did that a lot, and I took every precaution to do that. But just like a typical Nigerian, so I don't think any of, well, except for you, but I don't know if you guys have been there, but we are the kind of people that, I remember going home for Christmas, and in the morning you get up, and you go door to door, and you greet everyone.
Yeah,
you look at the, good morning, uncle. Yeah. Good morning, aunt. Yeah. You go and the whole compound. We have big compounds.
Yeah.
So I kind of, I've always embraced that. So even when racing, anyone can come up to me,
wow,
and say hello. What do you? And I'll talk to them. Oh, hello. How are you? Oh, let me show you what I did differently. Oh, let me see your car. Oh, you know you could do. So that's me.
Mm.
And people were watching. American Honda was watching.
Wow.
Yeah. And so they loved that about me, and that's why John said, "Hey, we love your style. Would you like to race for us and represent us?" I'm like, "Would I?" And he paid me $2,000 for every race I won.
Wow.
And for me, then I'm like, and this $2,090s dollars.
Yeah,
I'm like,
that's crazy.
Oh, this is like great, right?
Yeah.
And that's how I got to work with American Honda. And then that's how I got to build the first CRZ for them. They, you know, I got a call from John and he said, hey, we're coming up with a CRX replacement. Would you like to build one for us for SEMA? And I built this 500 horsepower CRZ, which is still here, by the way.
That's so
and
cool.
From then on, other manufacturers took note. Hyundai took note. Ford, we start getting all these people start approaching us to build cars for them, and that's how we started building cars for the OEMs. Was through American Honda, through my street racing, through seeing a crash, racing at a track, being polite and kind,
mm-hmm.
and then getting places that way. Yeah,
that is amazing.
That's a great story.
But that's how I got to racing.
Yeah, that's a great story.
My thing. Thank you.
So cool.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of really great things to unpack in that little story that you had there. That was so good.
I mean, condensed. A lot happened. It's condensed.
Yeah.
Because, it was the just a little side note that of importance. The engine of my choice then was a Honda D Series single cab.
Okay.
Now, for those who are not Honda heads, this is like the most hated throwaway motor ever. And it's not that I wanted to fail, I just couldn't afford anything as a student.
Yeah.
So what people did swaps in their Hondas with Prelude engines, which is like 2.2 liter mm-hmm. twin cam engines, or those out of an Acura Integra, either a VTEC GSR or LS. I couldn't afford a $6,000 swap as a student. So I stayed with my D Series and kept finding ways to make it lighter, work. Better, and more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even once I almost got kicked out of school for doing experiments in lab, trying to understand why my carburetors weren't better than injection.
What the?
That was just me. My passion for trying to figure things out, and it helped me tremendously. And the beauty is that the magazines went crazy. I could be a David versus a ton of Goliaths. I could many times win races, not because I was the most powerful or the fastest, because I was the most reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very good at cutting lights.
Yeah.
So I'm very, very good. I even posted something last week or 2 weeks ago on Instagram about my race versus Skunk 2. And Skunk 2 was this company with an RSX tube chassis with a K-series motor. And here I am with my D-series gearbox. And I broke the gearbox the round before, put a D15 gearbox, which is worse gearing, longer gears. And they beat me by 1/100 of a second because he cut a better light.
Oh.
But even my time was faster with a unibody car versus this tube chassis, Motec K-series setup, and my D gearbox carbureted car. Right? So it's just, but that's what I was known for, and the media ate that up. There's not one magazine, there's not one show on what was it then? Speed Vision back then,
mm-hmm.
or Fox Sports West, where they're covering an NHRA or IDRC or NOPE event where I wasn't covered.
That's
even if
so
I didn't win, I was that unique.
Yeah.
An African with a Japanese name driving CRX for a single car.
They were just like stacks of things.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so amazing. Yeah. The whole story of like coming from Nigeria to here, because I don't know if your parents are also supportive of this car, like this car craziness, or were they like, no, you are not going to do this. No. You are not going to ruin our reputation.
It's worse than that. I did not send my son to America to be a mechanic.
Exactly.
You know, like, fuck. Yes. So it's so interesting you said that. And for those who are non-African, Africans can relate to this. Even some Asians can relate to this, but non-Africans probably don't know what we're talking about. But I was supposed to come here to be an engineer and then go back home and help the parents with the factory, take over the factory. That was my goal. And I come here and I'm racing cars and having fun and making money. I hid that from my parents forever.
No way.
Never, even in the magazines, it took for me to get on television and get, I went home one year. I was in a barber shop getting a haircut and Speed Vision came on. They're like, BC Ezeria from Africa. And they're like, oh, that is you. I'm like, shoot.
No.
And the barber was owned by my brother-in-law. So I had to tell my parents. And luckily I brought a bunch of magazines home. So I took my father to the veranda at home and I sat down with him. And he said, I kind of figured that something was up with you. But I showed him all the magazines and what I'm doing. And I was really focused on technology. And he kind of accepted it. But he was not very happy with it.
Oh, my God.
He thought I was becoming, because where we're from, being a mechanic.
It's like the lowest of the low. Yeah,
it's the lowest. Mm-hmm. It's like you're in a pit in the ground and you're doing weird stuff. And it's just not, it's not prestigious at all.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, what being a chemical engineer, that was the thing to do.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to school for. And they didn't understand how I was going backwards.
Yeah.
But fast forward to today, you know, we accomplished quite a bit. They're very proud. They're coming this, my father used to be at SEMA. Every year, that SEMA, he was there.
Wow, yes.
Where Tim and I were there. He was there. He was so proud. And, you know, but it was a long journey. It was a long journey. Long, hard journey.
That's so crazy. Yeah, growing up, my parents were like they always wanted me to do, because initially I started off with engineering too. Engineering, computer science. I used to live in California, actually, LA. Yeah. But I just wasn't passionate about computer or anything, computer science or engineering. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love filming, but I love cars too. And so, but I didn't really know anything about cars. Like my dad didn't even know how to change oil. So,
Same here. They'll pay people, they could care less.
No, they could care, exactly. So they just hire a mechanic to do all of that. Uh-huh. Yeah, and so coming here, I was like, oh my gosh, I always had a passion for cars. And that just changed as well. Like seeing stuff like your cars or even them. Funny enough, like the way I met Tim and Rob and Trick Factory was I saw Larry Chen's video of his car.
Oh.
Yes, of his car. I also saw your car too. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so sick. And then that kind of spiraled with me trying to build stuff and all that. And years later, I'm now working here. So it's like,
that full is awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. And like,
by the way, with builds. Speaking of Larry Chen, he's also been a great advocate for us, because he actually also drove this car. I was like, what the heck is going on? And once again, I'm like, Larry, you like it? He's like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, guess what? It's half the battery pack. Imagine when I double the amperage here. It's going to be just, so he was really good. And speaking of what you're saying about your parents and going to motorsports or everything automotive, when I graduated from school, I did work in pharma research.
Okay.
So I was a lab rat, underground passes. I used to do what is called high performance liquid chromatography.
That sounds complicated.
Where I got unknown compounds for the pharma industry and just created pathways for quality control. And I did that for a couple of years, but I kind of figured it out it was kind of boring, and I still raced on the side. Now I'm making more money, I'm racing. And I noticed that since I love, just like you, I love talking to people, I saw the salespeople upstairs making way more money than us in the lab. I'm like, I need to do that. So I defected into sales and just killed it. That's when I bought my dyno. That's why I started building my car.
Wow.
That's why I bought the inside. I'm just balling, right? I'm making $130,000. I bought my house in my 20s. I'm just doing it. But then my passion was there.
Yeah.
And then something critical happened. I'll make this very brief, guys, but it's very pivotal for me. My regional director in sales retired. I went to Scottsdale to see him. He came down to Palm Springs to see me for dinner. And then we had to go Dutch after dinner with our girl. And that shocked me. This is a guy who I looked up to. He had a black Targa 911 back in the day. He was Italian, very debonair, very cool guy. I want to be just like him. But he retires from this illustrious career and he's going Dutch with me for dinner. Like, I'm like, I ended up paying the whole dinner anyway, but I felt bad. Like, okay, this is not what I want to be.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I felt that motorsports is a place where I can have a comfortable living and do well. So with that in mind, I reluctantly, after saving up, I reluctantly left corporate.
Wow. Okay.
And started Beastiemoto in Pomona, in a small 900 square foot facility. Went from, you know, six figure income to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'll give myself 2 years. And this is in 2006. I'll give myself 2 years. And if I don't like what I'm doing, I'm going to go back to corporate.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2 years, you know, we had economic downturn. So I even hurt more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I finally kind of persevered. And by 2010, I actually matched my salary, kept pushing and pushing. And I went to a bigger facility and a different facility. And I went to Kino. They came in Ontario. And it's just been a very interesting journey ever since. But it was my experience with corporate where I didn't want to be Frank Cali, my boss.
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to do more is what kind of probably like, hey, if I want to be successful, I probably just start a business like my parents did.
Yeah.
And by the way, when I left corporate, my dad was pissed. Oh, yeah. He's like, have you lost your mind?
What have you done?
You know, what is wrong with you?
What is wrong with you?
It's like, it was bad. Cause I had this cush job. You know, everything was good. I had a company car.
Comfortable.
I just got a Jeep Grand Cherokee company car. And I now had to go to my Civic Wagon as my daily because my cars are gone. It was bad. It was bad. I suffered. I would not wish that on anyone, but it really molded me to who I am today. I suffered. I had zero. You know what zero income is? My table.
Yeah.
I had a phone, a fax machine, and a box as a table for a year plus.
Yeah,
just trying to get this thing off the ground. It was bananas.
I've heard you guys' story before, but maybe you can share it with him.
It's similar. You gotta just put yourself in a spot where you can't fail.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what we did because we were in industrial fabrication before we got into cars, so we actually did really well. We're paid really well, and then sort of slowly transitioned. Our boss allowed us to have some space in the back of the shop that we started our company. And then it felt like we never left because we'd work all day and then work all night in the same facility.
Right.
So then we got our own space, a small space. I think it was 1,000 square feet, 1,200 square feet. So we still worked all day. Worked 6:45 to 3. Then we'd go to our shop and work 3 to 11. And then in that industry, there's highs and lows. So there'd be,
of course,
be layoffs. And then we got so busy that we started asking for the layoffs. And then it was like this sort of 3-year transition. And then we were all in. And then since then, it's just been, it's a journey. It's definitely a journey. Like when we started, we were just happy to have a shop. And now I think we're a little under 30,000 square feet. And this is just
very
like,
nice.
Yeah, it never ends though. Like it's with fantastic. You all day, every day. I don't know about that.
We'll take that one by the day. Yeah.
Some days it seems like a blessing. Other days it seems like I've created a nightmare for myself.
I hear you. I know. It's like we should change our names to firefighters.
I know.
Yeah, comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but that the pursuit of the passion and, you know, the things that make you happy, you know, oftentimes comes at sacrifice in other areas.
Yep.
You know, and like it takes a lot of like losses and you know, getting kicked and all that. You learn from those mistakes, those things, and you can gain from that. And it's been a long journey, and you can attest to what that means in your personal way. But that's what it is. I mean, it is not for everybody. Like, you know, there's so many people out there in the world that you wouldn't wish that on them for nothing. Because it's really, really hard. And I don't feel like it ever really gets that much easier, regardless of what tier you're at.
That like is correct.
It's constantly a journey and trying to improve.
Yeah.
We feel like we're constantly chasing it.
Yeah.
And then now transitioning into doing these EV builds, it feels like we're starting all over again.
Mm-hmm. It is, 100%, absolutely.
So it's been interesting. It's been a journey. But it's constantly learning, so it never feels, it's never mundane, it's never boring. It's never easy, but it's never boring.
Because it's not monotonous. Yeah.
No,
it's not doing
no.
the same thing over and over again. Every project is different and unique in its own way.
Mm-hmm.
And that keeps things exciting for me. It keeps me wanting to come in.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, so that's exactly like, right.
Our customers probably recognize our successes more than we do. Because they've been following us for so long. So they'll come in and be like, oh man, it's so crazy where you guys are at. I remember this point and you're like, Oh yeah, but because you're in it all day, every single day, you never really take time to recognize what's behind. Mm-hmm. So it's like when I talk to guys like you and you hear their stories and how many parallels there are, it's like we're always growing and complaining. It seems like we're always complaining, but from the outside coming in, it's like you've met these highs, but it's like then when I can get like a relatable story about the journey, it doesn't feel so bad to me because it's not like I'm the only one, because it's like it's a challenge.
This begs the question. Now I need to put you guys in hot seat. So you're doing this podcast. What led you to that pathway?
I don't know.
That's actually interesting. And I think Elvis over here,
Oh, thank you.
You know, the way that he is, and he kind of like brought that out of us. Yeah. He's like, you know, we should do a podcast. And we're like, you know what? We thought about it, but we're not really those guys. Yeah. He's more the guy because he's very much like you. Like he's very chatty. He's like that guy. And we're like, you know what? Let's do it. It was really uncomfortable. You know, in those first couple ones, you know what? This is actually pretty easy because we're just talking about things that we're all passionate about. Mm-hmm. It's actually not that hard.
Yeah.
And he's really good at keeping things moving and keeping us on topic, and he's naturally inquisitive, so it's a pretty easy thing to do. Like if it was just left to me and Rob, it'd be just radio silence here. So he was like the missing component.
I don't know if I believe that.
No, yeah, it is a lot of fun. Like, no, like the podcast that I was just like, oh yeah, it would be nice because I feel like we talk about cars regardless all the time, like it's something we all love. Yeah. And I was like, wait, why don't we just, because even our lunch table, we have lunch every day as a team and we just talk about cars. And I'm like, why don't we just make this a thing?
Where we need a GoPro because some of the conversations get so passionate about everybody's opinions of how things should be and where they should go. And like, there's a lot of ball busting about, because we all have personal projects. So there's a lot of that. So it's like, this is like, it never, like it's, this is just what we do. Like the podcast is a continuation of our lunch conversation.
Pretty much.
And then it's like this cruising the internet kind of thing. So we'll see your new drop and we'll have a big discussion about that. And then like maybe Kaizo will do something or this guy will do something. And it's like, it's just a natural conversation. So it's been pretty easy for us, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. It's just not being too opinionated is what...
Yeah,
holding that part of it back can be tough sometimes, but
and I also kind of use it as a way to, because again, like I mentioned earlier, I didn't grow up in a automotive background, so I, even though I have my own projects, a lot of projects, but I don't know how to do things. And so I'm like, if I'm thinking of, I'm like, oh, I don't know how to LS swap a car, I'm like, why don't we just have a conversation about that? And so I also learn from everything that they tell me. And so it's like a good way, a win-win. I learn and the audience learns. And so it's a good way to kind of do both. And so,
One of the things that I really like about podcasting is the opportunity to talk to people like yourself. Like we get kind of like bogged down in our day-to-day, like trying to accomplish and just run business and do our thing. But it's, and it becomes kind of like a small little world. We're like, are in our own little bubble. And then this gives us an opportunity to sort of reach out and sort of see, you know, and have a chat, you know, with somebody like you. And it's just kind of opens the world up again. And it's just like, oh, okay, wow. there's a lot going on. And it's really, really cool to see all the things that people are doing.
That's what's amazing about our industry.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen a scene that can bring so many different people together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More than cars. Cars are just, I have made friends that will last me my entire life. I've met individuals who have changed my life dramatically.
Wow.
We are now interacting this forum because of what? Our love for cars, anything automotive.
Mm-hmm.
It is an amazing scene. It's just amazing. And then, you know, from technology to you talk about Kaiser. I met him through that. I met him through when we did something with EA. We built a car for EA for Need for Speed. And I traveled to the UK because I was part of that one of the game franchise installments and met him and we hit it off. We're like, one day we should design something. You should design something. I'll build it. And that's how the Mobi X came to be. That's in the Peterson Museum right now on the
display. So cool.
And it's like, once again, I would never have met him ever if not for cars. I would meet you guys if I stayed as a chemical engineer working in the lab. You know, it's something about this community and I find it so appealing. I love this so much.
Mm-hmm.
I never leave it. It's just amazing. It's an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard to imagine anything outside of it. Mm-hmm. Like this is perfect.
Yeah, because again, like going back to when I was in computer software development and all of that, it's so different. Like you talking with people that are actually passionate about cars or about something, because you're like, and I've seen this meme a few times, but it's like, how do you talk with people that are not car people? So you like stuff, like it's like and things. There's nothing. I mean, so you have to find, it's harder to do that, but with car, as being like car enthusiast, it's so easy and it comes natural because everyone is passionate about something different in the car community. Absolutely. And there's so much difference and diversity in it. So it's mm-hmm. I just think that is pretty cool. So because you have a podcast, right? Or do you still upload on it?
Every Tuesday, I'm doing it tomorrow. I have a show known as Tech Tuesday on mm-hmm. Instagram, and I've now extrapolated that to YouTube as well.
Okay.
It's a form where, honestly, it's me giving back. Mm-hmm. Because this country has been so great to me. Like I mentioned to you, I came here alone when I was 16.
Wow.
With a suitcase, you know, just didn't know anything about cars. And I remember how difficult it was for me to be able to even learn. There was no trick factory where a young guy could come and ask questions mm-hmm. of you guys. There were shops that I go to. I remember there's one where there's G-Speed out in Gardena. And I go there and like, hey, I have my stereos. I want to put a camshaft in. Could you tell me what a camshaft does? And you know, how I could, you know, could you help me understand how to install it? Then I get out of here, kid.
Yeah.
Leave your car, give me some money, we'll do it for you. And no one, until I met John Concialdi from AEM, who took me under his wing and showed me the rope, mm-hmm. I was shunned so many times.
Wow.
So what I'm doing with this podcast, where I started years ago, and by the way, my parents gave me a hard time with that too.
Like, oh, really?
Is anyone paying you for this thing? Anyone paying you?
Why don't anyone pay you?
Wasting your money and time.
Yeah.
I did that to give back, to be that person I needed when I was younger. I needed that. So what I do on this podcast, and you guys feel free to join from time to time. I do it 12 noon, 3 p.m. Pacific every Tuesday. Mm-hmm. I am open to anyone to ask me any question.
That's so
I share
cool.
everything I know. Everything.
That's cool.
Everything. Yeah. Even if it's something I discovered last week, I share it.
That's so cool.
Because I want to give back, and I'm always learning and evolving. So like, for example, the technology in the Mobi I built is far ahead of this, and it was only 3 years prior.
Wow.
It's amazing how technology continues to evolve. And there's something we're working on today that I'll learn a ton from that I didn't know yesterday. Mm-hmm. And next week I'll know even more. So I'm constantly learning. So I'm not afraid of sharing everything I know because mm-hmm. I'm constantly moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I do.
So cool.
So I'm doing that, and it's just, and I encourage everyone to do that as well. Just be that person you needed when you're younger, whether it's for technology, health, mental health, you know, exercise, whatever it is, you never know how you can change or impact someone's life. You never know.
Yeah, and I just want to say, like, to people watching and listening this podcast, I encourage you to go and check out Bissy's podcast. It's actually really good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you do legitimately throw a lot of information into it, and I actually enjoy listening to it often.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
You're very kind. Appreciate that.
Yeah. I feel like we could talk for a long time. Like, we could honestly keep going. And I had a whole list of questions.
No.
I know. No, and I didn't even get to. No, it's fine. It's fine. But I feel like this opens up a conversation, but also with you and a relationship with you, because I feel like we would like to, and we'd like to keep this podcast to like an hour-ish, just because we also to respect your time as well. If you're open to it, we can have you on again. Like, there's so many questions.
I'm more than open to it. If you want to book something, let's get together again.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
And your audience loves it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd love to be able to share more. No problem whatsoever.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And I will take you up on your offer of because I have a channel where I review cars. And so whenever I'm in California, I will I will let you know, and I will come and drive that 935.
Yes.
And I want a proper amount of feedback, because I take criticism constructively.
Yep.
If you feel that I need to do something, let me know. One for example, is I mentioned Matt Farah earlier on. He doesn't like my braking system.
Really?
Yeah, he says your brakes are rubbish, because I like mechanical brakes. In this car next to me here, mechanical, I don't have.
Oh, unassisted. Really?
I like the feedback and all that stuff. So this car is unassisted as well. Mm-hmm. Even though I have a lot of regen and it works very well, about 75 kilowatts of regen, mm-hmm. which is very nice, but the braking system is mechanical. But based upon his feedback, the Mobi has an eye booster setup. So it has electric, kind of mechanical mm-hmm. Assist for braking because of his feedback. Or let me see, who's another gentleman that gave me some feedback recently? He's a very prominent real estate mogul in the Southern mm-hmm. California area. He drove my K3V as well and said, you should have a detachable steering wheel. I'm like, oh, okay, you loved it, but I want you to have that. I'm like, so? So I take criticism constructively. When you come by, drive it, let me know what you think.
Yeah.
And don't feel bad. Don't feel bad. You have my feelings. All open to it, by all means. And have fun with it. Just go to town and you just, you know.
Yeah.
You love it.
Yeah. Your builds are amazing. Like I've seen like at SEMA last year, the Mobi? Yeah. The Mobi was that BX? Yes. Yeah. That looked amazing. Like just everything.
It's still the same single cam mentality where I don't care what everyone else thinks. I just do my own thing.
Yeah.
People don't understand why I build 935s or why I do the things I do. Porsche guys threaten me all the time. Like, oh, sacrilege. I don't care. I just keep doing our thing. Our team, the team and I, you know, we build crazy stuff here, and I'm very proud for the team that we have here and all the things that we have coming out of this table.
Yeah. It's awesome. So we look forward to. I will definitely hit you up again, so we can probably schedule another podcast because it's just awesome to hear so much. You have so much knowledge, and it's just awesome to talk to you, especially also being a Nigerian brother. So
thank you. This has been a really, really great introduction to sort of getting to know you a little bit, what you got going on, how you came to be, and maybe in the next podcast we can talk a little bit about more of the details and some of the wonderful builds that you've got going on.
Talk about that.
I'd be more than happy. That'd be really. I'm super fascinated. So I want to know a lot more about what's going on in your brain.
Crazy stuff.
Crazy
stuff in house now. In the back, like cars that are not even. There's not, like one vehicle in particular is a hypercar that's the only one in the country.
Okay.
1,300 horsepower EV. It's.
Oh my gosh.
My brain is exploding right now. I'm twitching. To it. We need to do this. We got to do this again.
With that said, thank you guys so much for watching, listening to this podcast. If you liked it, give it a thumbs up. Subscribe to Bissimoto's channel. And we will see you guys later. Bye.